Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/talesfromabutterfly. Now, guys, with over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, iPad, Kindle, Android, or MP3 player, you can't go wrong. Now, I love to read, but with me being on the go a lot up and down the road, sometimes I don't have the ability to actually hold a book and read it. So the best thing to do is to download an audiobook and let the audio tell me the story. So go on over to www.audibletrial.com/talesfromabutterfly for your free 30-day trial and download your free audiobook today. Trust me, you won't regret it. Hey guys, welcome to Tales from a Butterfly podcast. I'm your host, Taria Shondell. Sometimes caterpillar, sometimes butterfly, but always striving to make it through life's many metamorphoses with my faith intact. With this podcast, I hope to encourage anyone that is going through life situations, no matter what they are, that have left you feeling like you will forever be a caterpillar in the cocooning stage, having to continually shed your skin while fighting to get free from any chains that are holding you back from your transformation. I want to tell you, keep your faith in the transformer, believing that just like the butterfly, when you come out, you will be a thing of beauty who is not afraid to fly. So come on, my butterflies, let's fly.
Why do you want this hoodie so bad?
I don't have this HBCU.
It's
nice hoodie.
Let me rep your HBCU on my
camera. So you gonna rep his and then he'll rep yours.
I would expound this stuff. I got some Clark shirt.
I got a couple stuff. A couple
okay, so do you understand it? So then why would you not let me get a hoodie? So buy me one of these hoodies.
Is this y'all? Buy you more. Is this y'all all the time? Back and forth.
Because he just don't want to just do that.
I just because I'm broke. I don't have no money for you. Right. All right. So I mean, slightly.
So if I give you the money, or you're going to have money by the time you go back to school, you're going to have back to school
Fair
money.
Enough.
So we can just trade off.
They could have different hoodies by then. All right. I had to see. All right.
So I just send you I know this is entertaining to y'all because I don't even think they know I was recording them the whole time. But you are listening to young, awesome gentlemen. You heard him say for himself, awesome gentlemen who are currently in college repping their HBCUs and that are talking about trading shirts and repping each other's HBCUs. So... But I want to thank you guys for downloading episode 26 titled Young, Gifted, and Black, Kevin Bullock and Antoine Hawkins. I wanted to talk to them today because, you know, with everything going on in the world today, you know, you got number 45, you got the killing and what seems like open season on from young black men all the way, you know, to men that are seniors, it seems like it's just open season on them with no repercussions. So, and a lot of times society will portray our young black men as not really having a lot going for them or not having the same mindset as their white counterparts. So today I'm interviewing two bright, brilliant students who I know contradict that stereotype because that's what it is. It's a stereotype. Absolutely. So I'm going to have them introduce themselves and what HBCU they are repping.
How you doing? My name is Antoine Hawkins and I attend the illustrious North Carolina Central University.
Good morning. My name is Kevin Bullock. I attend Morehouse College.
Okay, and y'all, I was going to say what grade?
I'm a junior sophomore.
I'm a junior psychology major. I am a rising sophomore, and my major is theater concentration and performance.
Yes, they're both gifted in all areas. I'm a little surprised to hear Kevin is going into psychology. I thought he would say government because I had already got my white suit ready because I had told his mom I was going to be the Olivia Pope. I was going to be his chief of staff. But
I majored in political science first, and I didn't like it.
You didn't like it?
I couldn't do it. It was.
I ain't gonna be able to wear my white suit for you in psychology. No, I don't know what I can do. With the white hat.
I definitely gave it a go. I didn't like the concept. How I thought I would.
All right. So now, what made you both choose North Carolina and Morehouse, respectively, versus? And did you have other colleges on your list?
It's a funny story, actually. I was going to a college called California University of Pennsylvania. I was going. I had a roommate. Had my ID. I went to see the campus.
You was in.
I was in. I was. That's where I was going to go. Like I went to go see my room. Wow. Everything. I got accepted like by the president. Like, I went and talked to him, and he helped me up. And that's where I was gonna go. But then Morehouse didn't accept me. First okay. they sent me a letter saying you were accepted. Then they sent me another letter saying, oh, basically, my bad, you're not accepted.
What?
Yeah, so.
Wait a minute.
Yeah, that's what they did. So then, basically, like, they were sending mail, and, like, I never really looked at it because, basically, y'all just told me, like,
right.
it was an accident. So probably everything else y'all send is an accident. So I wasn't looking at it, and then they had, like, a summer program coming up, and basically, I got a call saying, basically, are you coming? You know, are you going to come to the school? And they were like, I was like, you know, I wasn't accepted. He told me I wasn't accepted. And they told me I was. And while I was talking to them, I happened to be seeing the envelope they sent me, like the big Morehouse envelope.
Oh my goodness.
Because so, I've been had it. It was just sitting there in the house, but I just never opened it because they already told me I wasn't. So then once I opened that and realized I was accepted, that's where I decided to go. Because like once Morehouse give you that call, you can't really like deny it.
You can't, you going. Wow. Yeah. That just gave me chills. That's amazing. So it was definitely meant for you.
Definitely.
To go. Because I've never heard. You're going, oh, wait, no, you can't come. Yes, like, that's crazy. Mm-hmm. And what about you?
So, it's funny for me. I was doing college tours since, like, seventh grade. So, like, I was in seventh grade. I went to my first college tour. And I pretty much had gone all the way up until 10th grade.
Wow. So, but how come so early, if you don't mind me?
Because Destiny, my sister, she was going into college around the time of my seventh grade year.
Okay.
So she was trying to go get fields for, you know, schools that she wanted to go to. And once I got into high school, it was really for me. Mm-hmm. So
okay.
I started going to college tours. And I had been to NCCU. And like, I've been there more than once. And I remember going, I just felt so, you know, at home. Like, I just okay. felt like that's where I needed to be. But I just didn't really know until I okay. had to figure it out. So at first, I wanted to major in psychology because I wanted to get into the biological basis of behavior.
Hmm.
But I realized that that was just my fascination. But I had been okay. acting since I was like 8. So I had to decipher which one is your fascination and which one is your passion. And I realized that theater was my passion and it was something that I could do for the rest of my life and live happily. And psychology was just something that I was fascinated in. Like I was fascinated okay. in learning about the brain. And I mean, I still have pretty much the knowledge that I had learned from the classes wow. that I had taken, but you know, I had to make a decision. So it came down to me trying to find schools that'll fit what my major would be.
Versus you trying to yeah. fit them. Okay.
Versus me trying to form to the school. So that's why I had to make a decision of whatever I wanted to do because I didn't want to go undecided. Like I wanted to have a clear path on where I wanted to okay. what I wanted to do. So I was applying to a whole bunch of schools. I applied to like 13 schools. Like I applied to a lot of schools.
With these application fees, my yeah, goodness, because I know when I was applying in 95, they was like $50.
Yeah, and they still not no better. But and I then I wow. applied to some art schools too, and okay. I auditioned at some art schools. Which were PWIs, but
now break that before he breaks that down, y'all. I'm gonna tell you, I was listening to a different podcast, Candidly Keisha with Keisha Knight Pulliam in November, right after the election, and she had college students on, and I heard them say PWI, and I'm like, what is PWI? And I'm gonna have AJ break that down for you right now.
PWI is a predominantly white institution versus what a HBCU is, a historically black college or university. So I figured that me going to an art school was best for me because I could, you know, and
okay.
my major would be whatever I'm working on. And literally when you go to an art school, pretty much everything you do is surrounded by art. Your mm-hmm. math is art, like your science is about your art. So I figured that's what I needed to do. But then I realized like, that's just not me. Like that's just not my personality. And me being surrounded by, I'm not gonna say those people, but me being surrounded in that environment really wouldn't fit me the best. So I knew I wanted to go to a school in North Carolina because I was pretty like gung-ho about going to the University of North Carolina School of the Arts.
Okay.
But of course, like I said, I didn't really want to go to a PWI.
Okay.
So
let me ask you this. How did you guys first hear about PWI? Because in my mind, I'm wondering how I said, oh, y'all repping HBCUs. Do yeah. they say I'm repping a PWI?
I have never heard anybody say that.
Okay, okay.
I've never heard okay. anybody who was actually a part of it say mm-hmm. that it's a PWI.
Okay, and that's, okay.
Like, I've only ever heard it when I was in, like, college tours or on, you know, college campuses or HBCU campuses or people that were trying to tell me, like, look, either you want to go to a HBCU or a PWI. So that's really...
So they're saying don't even go to a mixture.
Well,
they're
I mean, it could be, because there are a lot of diverse schools, but it was, but half the time you can't really find them. Like I know I probably would, when I was trying to look, I couldn't find a lot, especially with art, because half the time art schools are PWIs and they actually look for minority students so that they could create a more diverse set of people on their campus, almost like affirmative action.
Okay.
I'm gonna piggyback on that. Also, I feel like with mixed schools, those are kind of like schools that aren't really known. And it's about, you come out of college with a degree, but you want to have like a certain name, like certain things that jump out first.
You're right.
Especially wherever you're trying to work. So it was trying to find a school with a name and a school that could help me at the same time. But I knew I didn't want to go to a PWI. And I heard about those on a college tour that I went on in like sixth grade. We went to college on sixth grade.
Wow.
And that's when I was first, because we went to an HBC, it was HBCU tour. So and it was like basically the whole tour, they was telling us, you know, we have X, Y, and Z compared to PWI that does not. So that's when I had to, you know, stop, ask questions, and I kind of found out what it was.
That was so interesting to me when I heard it. And then I at a party that we all attended on Saturday. No, y'all, I was not partying with the college kids. We all had somebody in common. I was walking past AJ and heard him say PWI, and that really triggered me to stop and say, you know, that's the first time that I had heard that. And I was actually standing with a gentleman who was around my age, and he hadn't heard it either. Mm-hmm. So that was really interesting. But I had cut you off when you were talking about how you made your decision. So go back into that.
To make a long story short, I took the long way to get here. To make a long story short, I remember that I really enjoyed being at this school, and I saw that they had a theater program, and I saw that they actually were successful in that theater program, but I also felt like I could get a lot done, because there were still things that I didn't see that I thought I could, you know, add. Like all the things that I was seeing was like seniors and juniors putting on for the theater department, and really you didn't see any underclassmen or anything like that with kids just coming up, and it was really just females too.
Not a lot of males.
I didn't see a lot of males. So I figured me going to that school would benefit me and benefit them too. So when I got there and I realized that there really weren't a lot of males, and the ones that were there were about to leave. Like, they all graduated.
Okay. Now.
So I stepped up as a freshman, and I was pretty much in every single show that we had done. I got the lead role in our, don't pat me, I got the lead role in our school's musical, and I was the only freshman in the entire show. Either everybody was younger than me or older than me, because our school also lets people from high school do our shows. So that was a really good experience, and at the end of it, I wound up getting Most Promising Freshman.
But something that you said jumped out to me, and I actually heard it from, I interviewed Michelle Thornton, who is the senior vice president of BET, TV Centric, the television channel for Black women. And it's funny how what you said, you're relating to college, but in her field, before she went to BET, she worked for CNN. She said she was busting her butt doing, you know, always did her job good or what have you. But they told her, her boss told her, I'll never promote you, even though they knew she could bring something of value. So she hired a coach, and she investigated companies that she could offer them something. So when you said it wasn't just for what they could do for you, I don't feel like a lot of college students probably feel like, well, what can I bring to the college? You know, because we look at it as so big, not realizing that we have our own gifts that we bring to somewhere. So that was honestly really interesting that you said that.
My goal is honestly to leave to leave that school and them all remembering who I am. Because that's really how I left high school. Like, I left high school with pretty much the whole school knowing what I did and how I did it.
Okay.
So I really want to do the same thing in college and leave my imprint, so that when I actually do make it in, you know, success, that they can look back and be like, oh, he went to NCCU and he did an amazing job there. So it's no reason why he shouldn't have been this successful. So,
Wow, that's good. I like that. I told y'all they are very smart. They're critical thinkers, which is good too. So now my next question, Kevin, you're the only male in your family, you know, the male child. AJ, you're the only male child in your family. So with everything going on with, you know, racism, especially geared towards our Black men, do you feel an added pressure? Not that either of your parents have put on you, but because even though you have sisters, it's up to you. You got to succeed.
Definitely. And it's not even just a family thing. I'm the first male to go to college, period. Like, on both sides of my family, I'm the first male to ever go to college.
That's amazing.
So it was definitely pressure because, and it wasn't pressure that my family put on me or anyone put on me. It was pressure that I put on myself mm-hmm. because I think so much. So I was just thinking real deep into it, like, wow. And then on top of that, it's Morehouse. And on top of that, you know, Pastor Bryant helped me out and everything.
That's like the church that we attend, y'all. We all attend Dr. Reverend Jamal Bryant's church.
Yeah, he's a Morehouse alum. So he was like kind of like helping me and mentoring me and popping up at the school. So it's definitely like,
I heard about like, them pop-ups, Kevin.
He popped up a couple times to see what was going on. It wasn't even that bad. It wasn't that bad. But definitely it was a lot of pressure. But it was also something I felt like it wasn't something that I couldn't handle.
Okay.
You know, you had to just basically just go in and just take your time and adjust. And also, I mean, I also chose Morehouse because Morehouse wasn't that big of a school. And I wasn't trying to go to like a, as far as like numbers, I wasn't trying to go to like a school where it was a PWI because mainly PWIs have 30, 40,000 students. Absolutely. And you like kind of get swallowed up and it's like 200 people in the classroom. Yeah.
Professor like don't that. Even know you.
Don't even know you. So and Morehouse is like the classroom is probably, you know, no bigger than the room we're in right now.
For real. That's cool too.
Honestly.
Really?
You got to pile up in the classroom. Like this. And the class is mainly 25, 30 students at the most.
Okay.
So you can definitely get to know your professor and be intimate on that level. So, yeah, definitely it was pressure for me, but it was something I knew I could, you know,
deal that with. You can handle.
For me, it was less pressure, but more like my nervousness and just getting out of like where I am.
Okay.
Because
well, when you say "am," meaning the
Baltimore.
Under yeah, I mean, the comfort of your okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I really mean Baltimore. Like just because this is the thing. When you get out of Baltimore and when I had gone to North Carolina Central, they didn't even recognize that Baltimore was a place. It was just the DMV.
And, yes, okay,
and honestly,
okay.
And honestly, I didn't even know that was a thing outside of here. So when people would ask me, like, where are you from? I'm like, I'm from Baltimore. Like, oh, you're from the DMV? Like,
I'm from Baltimore.
Because whenever we have parties and they say, oh, this for you, DMV, they play go-go. I don't listen to go-go. I don't like go-go as much. So it was a culture shock. It was just me getting out and realizing that, like, life is so different down there.
Okay.
And they all think they move. They do things a different way than we do.
Okay.
So that's really where, like, my uncomfortability would have been. It's just the fact that I was so far away from home and the fact that there was nothing there to remind me. Like, I'm used to, like, 7-Elevens and McDonald's in every corner. The only gas station that we have mm-hmm. around us is an Exxon that closes. So
said that closes.
So it's not even, like, and a Burger King. Like, it's really mm-hmm. nothing around there. Like, it's and the city is kind of small, so it's not really much that I can work with to make me feel like I'm home.
Also, I'm going to piggyback on that, the whole DMV thing. Now, the issue, well, not the issue, but the thing with Morehouse is, now, coming from Baltimore, like, also, we were caught up in the DMV thing, like, by people who weren't from, like, the DMV area. But since the majority of the school is from the DMV area.
Really?
Baltimore, yeah, like, a lot of them. A whole lot.
Okay.
Especially my freshman class that I was in when I came in. So, since it was like that, basically Baltimore was just viewed as violence because now it's viewed as since everybody is right here from in the area, all they see is the violence from this area. So now it wasn't a shock. It wasn't really a shock to me, but it was a shock for them to see that I'm not that, you know,
see that you're different.
Coming out here. Like I'm acting well, you know, I know how to act in certain environments and, you know, speak to certain people.
And
it was just the issue was I could speak well, but I was assertive. So like, for example, there was a situation where, We had this thing called Crown Forum, which is every Thursday we bring in a special guest speaker, whether it's alumni or someone famous to come speak to us about, you know, anything, just to talk
just
to
anything.
Us, anything, any topic, just to just enlighten us on something. So coming in freshman year, we were getting yelled at by everybody for no reason. We had hall meetings with our RAs and we were being, you know, cussed out about stuff. Yeah, just that, and it's like we've been here for less than a week. We ain't even get a chance to mess up yet. I haven't seen the inside of a classroom, anything. So we've been yelled at by our RAs every night at hall meetings. Tuesdays we have freshman orientation, which is like the same thing.
Pretty much.
Being yelled at by the deans, and Thursdays we're being yelled at Crown Forum by any guest speaker just for no reason. So it was, and me, I'm not from all of that. I'm from, you know, like just a peaceful, like school's not like this. You know, school, everybody treats everybody acts well.
Right.
Like, professors and teachers don't do this, like in high school. So it was a certain Crown Forum, it was a certain guest speaker. His name was David Walrice. I didn't know who he was at the time, but apparently he's a very important person on the campus. So he was coming in and he was yelling at us. And basically I just stood up and cut him off and I said, you know, How you doing? And we had to give our intro. My name is Kevin Bullock. I'm a freshman political science major from Baltimore, Maryland. And basically, I'm not used to this. You know, you are speaking to us this way. We came here to be grown as men, and y'all treating us like children the entire time. I'm getting yelled at in class. I'm getting yelled at in hall meetings. I'm getting yelled at in freshman orientation. And this is what the school is offering, is just being scolded everywhere. I don't want to go here. So I was just letting them know how I felt. It was like basically people were surprised that I could, you know, like articulate how I felt without, you know, being violent and being from where I'm from.
And they were really, now when you say surprised, was it other people from Baltimore or them?
It's probably maybe freshman year, I was the only person I knew from Baltimore. That was it.
No, so they were looking at
everyone else was from PG County, Laurel, DC, like Virginia, the real like DMV.
Okay, yeah,
just looked at it. I mean, looked at me weird, and of course they didn't say in the beginning because you say you from Baltimore, and they say okay, I'm gonna watch how you move, pretty much.
Okay,
and we were all friends because we all lived in the same hall, lived in the same area. We like the freshman class dealt with each other. So, like, of course, down the line they told me, you know, I'm surprised that you're not out here, you know, acting crazy. Like, you, I said, yeah, I'm not a product of my environment. Like, of course, it's crazy stuff going on, but that's not me, you know. I'm here trying to better myself.
But you know what? That also speaks to how we, you know, I titled the podcast Young, Black, and Gifted, because the reality is you're Black first. Right. You are young and you are gifted young men. But it's almost sometimes disheartening to see that other Black people view us that way.
Yeah.
Because if anybody should know, or at least try to get to know me on that level, which they did do, but I mean, just off the jump, for them to actually be surprised that you could speak, well, just because of the area that you come from.
No, honestly though, like when I went down there, I didn't know what it felt like to not have friends there. Cause when I went, most of the people that I had knew actually came with me. Like my friend from middle school, I've known him since sixth grade. He's my roommate. And him and I have been friends since sixth grade all the way through high school and all of that.
Okay.
I played basketball with another one of my close friends when I was in seventh grade. Ironically enough, played the same time with him as I did with my roommate. And this other girl, like two other girls that I had known, had come to the school with me. So I didn't really not have a support group around me. Like, I had people that I knew that were there that could talk the same thing I was saying, and they could do whatever I wanted to do. They could share the same values as me because that's just who we were. But it really was like people were really shocked just to see how, like, they think we're so aggressive. Like, they think that we just want to, like, be so hard and do whatever else. But, like, they get surprised when they see you just calm and just articulating yourself.
And, like, and assertive. Because there's a difference between being aggressive and being assertive.
Absolutely. And, like, the thing is, like, whenever I've had situations where I had to really assert myself, it wasn't like I was yelling. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like I was trying to get loud or be, you know, outlandish or belligerent. Mm-hmm. None of that stuff. It's just, if I have to tell you something, I'm going to tell you. And I'm going to communicate to you in a way you're going to hear me no matter how you feel.
Right.
But I'm not going to try to be aggressive and try to start an argument because life's too short for all that. Arguments. And I'm young and I'm already too old for that. So
I like that.
So I just really, it really was a, this is just a big difference down there.
Well, now let me ask you this, with you being assertive, because I think back with the times that we have going on now, of course I didn't live during those times, but like my family's from Florida. So my grandma remembers the separate bathrooms, you know, and all that kind of, the separate water fountains, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And you know, back then, and we watch it in movies. Somebody Black is driving, they get stopped by the cops. Their parents teach them, don't say anything. Just yes, sir. No, sir. Has anyone ever tried to not necessarily stifle your assertiveness, but to give you advice on, listen, you're young, you're Black, so don't be so assertive. They may see it as aggressive. Has anybody ever tried to kind of extinguish that?
All the time.
But I'd like to add too much knowledge for that.
Because it's like the people like I go to school with, I feel like being assertive is not just a Baltimore thing, but it's a up north thing. Like we tend to speak more assertive than people from down south. So they always try to tell us, you know, basically, you know, that might get you in trouble one day. But I mean, I never really looked at it as like me, mm-hmm. like saying things that would get me in trouble. I'm just speaking my mind. I'm saying how I feel. And I'm not going to be, you know, muzzled for anybody. I'm going to say how I feel. And I'm not going to disrespect you, but I'm going to, you know, say what I need to say and get my point across regardless. So it was never really an issue for me. It was just because I knew how to control it. Basically,
okay.
It was never anger behind it. It was always trying to like give knowledge.
And I know both your parent. I know both of your parents very well, and that is something that speaks to them and their parenting, teaching you how to speak your mind. You know, even though as parents we may not always translate well, but you eventually get the message. Yeah. So that's good that none of your parents tried to stifle that.
Yeah, but I have been in situations where someone was trying to like tell me that the way I would do things or the way that I like my views were too much. Like you have to diet down in order to fit within society. But the thing about it is when somebody does that to you, they almost become argumentative when you realize, well, when you both realize that you're the one that has more knowledge than them. Right. So what winds up happening is when someone has more knowledge than the other person that they're talking to, it's no longer an argument. It can't be an argument. It's a knowledge.
Because you need the one of your books. Okay.
It's teaching. It's like, I'm about to teach you a lesson now. So when I've had a conversation when somebody was telling me that, like, when I had to get pulled, when I got pulled over, just sit there, yes sir, no sir.
Somebody did tell you that.
Absolutely. Okay. But the thing is, I've already learned all the rights that I have at a traffic stop and all the rights that I have at a stop and frisk. I've learned these things before. Hmm. So when they sat there and told me that, it's like, well, even if I can say yes sir, no sir, I still have the right to not say anything at all. Mm-hmm. I don't have to answer any question if I really don't think it's appropriate at the time. And you know what I'm saying? It's just when you have knowledge about things, you kind of shut down a lot of the negativity in the world. And really, that's what going to a HBCU is all about. It's about you finding yourself, not even just within yourself, because that's what college does. But what HBCU does, you find yourself, but you also find yourself as a black person in this country. Hmm. And you're supposed to, because if you really don't know yourself as a black person in this country, you're going to conform, and it's not going to be good for you because you're not even going to know who you are. And that's how people take advantage of you when you don't even have the knowledge of yourself. Hmm. And like me going into the knowledge of self, I've learned that true white privilege is when they don't have to learn our history, but we are beaten down to know theirs. Constantly. Mm-hmm. I could tell you their history front and back just from where I am right now in my teachings, but their privilege is to not know what our history is. So to combat that and to make sure that we're well equipped in this country, we need to know our own history first.
Mm-hmm. I so agree with that. They're at the gym that I go to, I had someone tell me I hear this thing, white privilege, and I grew up poor. I grew up broke. I had things happen to me. Mm-hmm. And I said, privilege is that you can walk down the street and not be looked at as a target or not be killed. Your brother can walk down the street and not be. It's a privilege to live. Yes. In other words, like the simplest thing, you're born into this world. It shouldn't be a privilege to live.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, African-Americans don't have that privilege. Right. Yeah. And how you said they... When you don't know yourself, you conform. So you look at it like you're getting along to get along, but really they're laughing at you because they know that you're just you become a jester.
Yeah.
And just doing whatever you can to get along. So you guys are really, I can say that for my generation, it is comforting to know that there is a generation like you guys coming up behind us, because just like Elisha, and I might be getting my J's wrong, pass the mantle to Elisha, and if any of y'all biblical scholars are listening, you know what I'm talking about, so you don't got to tweet me or and all that, you know what I'm talking about. But just like he passed the mantle to him, it's my generation's job to not kill your voice, because I find that raising kids, we will say as parents, don't care what people think about you. I'm going to give you an example. We'll say, you shouldn't care what people think. So what if they don't like you? Mm-hmm. But then let's say you come down the stairs and we feel like you're dressed inappropriately. The first thing we say is, what would somebody say if they saw you like that?
Yeah.
So it's like, we've got to learn to consistently empower and not empower you. I'm going to empower you, but you can only have it when I give it to you.
Yeah.
Versus just empowering you. And I feel like the way you guys handle yourselves is a respectful manner. Because my mom always told me, it's not what I said, it's how I said it. And that's what I had to learn. Mm-hmm. I had a job where the vice president would frequently tell me, everything you say, you are right, but it's how I said it. Because I'd be so enraged, like, how are you not fixing these issues?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So the fact that you guys know that at such a young age is great. Now, I have a question for you. I was talking to one of you guys' other friends who was supposed to do the podcast, and I guess circumstances came up. He wasn't able to, but he gave me a very interesting answer. I said, do you feel like you being young black men, you're going to college, even though you're going to college, society still views you as thugs sometimes. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like your degree is really going, not to you, but I mean, is really going to matter in the long run?
No. I even feel like, I'll take it a step further, and I feel like my degree is not really going to matter at all, because my father tells me all the time, because he didn't go to college. He tells me all the time, basically, yeah, you're going to school for a degree, but that's not what I really want you to get out of. I mean, of course, I want you to get that.
Right,
I want
right.
you to get the experience and the networking out of it. It's all about okay. the connections you make. So, I mean, of course, I'm going for the degree. I'm going to get a degree, but it's like, I'm looking for everything else. You know, I'm looking for
okay.
these lifelong, you know, friendships and camaraderies and all the networking I can make. So I'm just trying to look for opportunities now and things like that. I mean, but we're going to be viewed how we view regardless. I mean,
okay.
it's just like, basically, it's no reason to continue to complain about it. Of course, people are going to continue to do things about it. And I mean, my campus also, we still, you know, we're very active in the community and try to, you know, help empower those around us, because HBCUs are mainly placed in, you know, poverty-stricken neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
Mine is in the
which is the craziest thing to me, yeah. But at the same time, it does offer. We say we want to give back to the community, but you got to be there, I right. guess, to give back right. in certain instances.
Like my housing, like the way Morehouse is set up, it has like housing on campus, but it has this place called the Suites, and the Suites.
I heard right about
on,
them.
Yeah, the Suites are right on the street of the West End, like Parsons. Where it's like, it's very violent. You can hear gunshots every night, honestly. Like, it's very violent.
Yeah.
Students get robbed.
Is that near Martin Luther, the church area where Martin Luther King, whereabouts is that in Atlanta? Because I went in November, and I was wondering where Morehouse was comparison to. We went to see the Martin Luther King exhibit in his church in Ebony. Yeah. Where's Morehouse in?
Not too close.
I okay.
mean, everything else was really toward downtown. But this is just... The school was smack in the hood.
Okay.
Like smack dab in the hood. So, I mean, that also adds like a scare for most people, especially like if you're not from that kind of area.
Okay.
So, I mean, that kind of messes with people. But, I mean, it's all about just how you conduct yourself, and just don't try to be anything you're not, and just be okay with who you are in society.
I like that about your generation, too. I say that often. I used to get on my oldest daughter, Ariel. She's 20. And I'd be like, are you really going to wear that? But then I said, you know what? You're fortunate and it really is as long as you like what you got on or like you, it's not like in my mind when it was like, oh, is that Guess? Is that Polo? Is that, there's so many. I mean, now it's like, oh, what thrift store did you get that from? Or
honestly,
whatever, you know? So it's great to like you. I like how you said that just as long as you're okay with yourself. Cause as soon as the minute people see that you're not, that's when they mess with you.
But here's the issue. That's not how everybody thinks, though. Like, I would love for everybody to think that way, but like I feel like that's something that I seen happen at my HBCU. It wasn't really something I seen home. Home, it was, you know, oh, you got to wear, you know, Lacoste or whatever.
But
then once you got to an HBCU and everybody was just together, like, yeah, it's still some people who are not mentally there. Yeah, you got to get to that mental level to realize that all these material things do not matter.
Okay.
Like I had a friend of mine, and like
he's
real humble, and it's like he inspires me daily, and he doesn't even realize it. Like we would go to parties, and people would put on their best outfit to go to a party.
Okay. Yeah.
And just to be in girls' faces and stuff like that, and talk to them. But he'd come with sweatpants and slippers on, and do the exact same stuff we
like
doing.
The slide ins.
The same amount of girls we talking to, and it's like he tell us it don't matter. Like it's all about who you are as a person. It's not about what you can put on. So. I mean, that's definitely something I tried to, like, you know, learn, try to, now I tried to impute on people when I came back.
Okay.
But it's all about, you know, who's willing to listen, who's trying to go to that mental level.
Okay. Honestly.
Absolutely. For me, with my degree, since I'm getting a degree in art, it's bigger than just what the degree stands for. Mm-hmm. It's really the knowledge that I've gotten from getting the degree.
Okay.
So, like, I can be further advanced if I know all of the logistics that I have to within my craft, so that when I get into the world and I'm trying to actually perform, I can be one step ahead of most people around me. Because it's real how a white person can get his high school diploma, and it's the equivalent of my college diploma as a bachelor's. That's a real thing. It's almost like we got to work twice as hard to get half as far.
Yes.
And that's not fair. But
to get half as far,
But what is fair is if I can stay true to myself and get the knowledge that I need for myself, so that I'm not going into the world blind.
Okay.
And that if somebody is around me, if my counterparts are around me, I can know just as much as they do, if not more.
Okay.
So my degree does matter.
And like he said, like knowing who you are and knowing who, like your true self and being okay with that person is really critical to know because like you don't see Bill Gates walking around with chains and $1,000 watches.
You're
and,
right.
You know, shoot, like he's not trying to flaunt what he has, but he got more money than anybody who may say that they got a lot of money. He got more money than all of them, and he don't need to walk around like Mark Zuckerberg, for example. Mark Zuckerberg, if nobody's ever realized, he only wears a gray shirt. That's the only thing he does.
Okay.
When you look at him, he mostly wears gray shirts. And he literally does that because he's trying to cut out decisions in his day. Because he makes so many decisions in a day that one thing he doesn't want to make a decision about is what he's going to wear. Mm-hmm. So he literally wears the same thing all the time. And that's only to show that money don't have to have such a hold on your materialistic values within yourself. Like, it just doesn't have to be like that. Me, I'm okay with going to the thrift store. I like having to play with styles that's not even just going on right now, but styles that have already happened from the 70s.
But see, I think that
80s.
Speaks to your creativity, the artness in you. It's you know, because that's an art too, styling,
absolutely.
You know, putting stuff together
absolutely.
Is an art.
And surely that's how I like to portray myself to other people, that I'm actually an artsy-fartsy person. But,
it's funny you say that about Mark Zuckerberg, like trying to, like just wearing gray shirts to limit decisions, because I didn't know that, but that's what I...
Yeah, a lot of people don't know that.
You pictured him in your mind,
yeah,
didn't you?
So look, the first thing I did when I went to Morehouse is I was trying to be able to like mainly focus on what's important. And I knew like clothing wasn't important. So to get myself away from that, I went to the bookstore and I bought every single Morehouse shirt. Like every Morehouse piece of paraphernalia I could just to take that out of my mind of having to like show off and then flaunt what I have.
That's a lot of pressure too, because then you're always thinking, what I'm going to wear tomorrow? What I'm going to wear?
Definitely. It really is, but half the time I don't even be caring. Like
I know people who don't go to class because they can't find an outfit.
You lying.
I know people the same way.
Who miss class because they can't find an outfit because they know they got a 3 o'clock class and around 3 p.m. Spelman's starting to roll on over to our campus and things like that. So they can't find an outfit and they say, forget it, I'm just not gonna go outside.
But see me, I go to school, I go to class in slippers, cooling.
Every day.
Don't even care. Like every day. I don't care what nobody say. Now this is different on certain days. Like on Fried Chicken Wednesday, or for example, we all go to the cab, you feel me? I'm not gonna act like I don't wanna at least pop out for one smooth day, you feel me? This is the thing. I enjoy dressing up. I don't enjoy dressing up every single day.
Okay.
But surely I do enjoy dressing up, and I like looking in the mirror like, you know what?
You know what I like? Yeah.
It's a clean little boy range. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
I like looking good on certain days, and the one thing that I will keep on me that I may not always dress up, but I always have circle glasses. That's like my trademark.
Okay.
So if I'm wearing something that's totally out of this world, but you will always still see circle glasses on my face, and people respond to it how they want to. It kind of makes an image for you, but...
Well, that's funny because let's just say 10 years from now, somebody could be doing a podcast or what have you, and they'll say, you know the one thing about the guy, AJ, how you just said about... And I said AJ, y'all, but his name is Antoine. I'm trying to transition into his grown, you know, name. But what you just said about Mark Zuckerberg could be what... somebody says about you some years from now.
He wears those gray shirts. And them circle
glasses. As soon as you said that, I was like, I pictured him. Mm-hmm. Oh, he's right.
Yeah.
Now, so in asking y'all that question about your degree, Deshaun's answer was pretty much the same thing. He said we're already born with two strikes against us. We're male and we're black. Mm-hmm. So to him, he felt like if he didn't get that degree, that's a third strike. Mm-hmm. So then my question to him was, and which I'm going to ask you. So you have your parents. You have your parents. Right. You've always had the support you've needed to get to that next level. Mm-hmm. What would you say to the young man living on North Avenue who... Let me go back. Because Sean said you have to change your mindset and in order to get it, you've got to change your mindset. So now let's speak to the young man on North Avenue who in his heart feels the same way y'all do. I got to get this. I was born with two strikes, but he doesn't have the mom or the dad or the support. Maybe the father's not in the house. Maybe the mother's not in the house, and the parent that is in the house is working. Mm-hmm. So college, boy, what do you mean about college? You better get out of here and get a job. Or what would you say to the one whose parents say are both on drugs and he's taking care of himself? He has it in his heart, but he has yet to build his mental. So how would you encourage young men, different things they can do to build their own mental when they don't have that support?
So while I was in school, I came across this guy And he asked me what my name was, and automatically I knew where he was from. He was from here. He was from Baltimore. Okay. I heard it as soon as he asked me what my name was. I already knew exactly where he was from. So I was like, nah, yo, you from Baltimore? He was like, yeah. I was like, where you from? He was like, from over east. And I said, okay, that's cool. But he told me that when he was in high school, he was living on his own because his parents couldn't take care of him anymore, basically. They couldn't take care of him anymore. So he was on his own. And it was hard for him to even want to go to college. Like, he didn't even really want to, just because of the people that he was around and the fact that he was just so stuck on what happened. And, like, he was just saying, like, what was really bringing me down was the fact that I kept wallowing in what happened to me and what was going on with my parents. And I figured, well, if it happened before, it's going to keep happening again. And I'm going to follow this. But then he realized, well, I can apply to school and I could probably still get accepted. He wound up getting accepted to NCCU and they're paying for everything. Because he was living on his own. And I agree with what Deshaun was saying with the whole, you have to change your mindset, because it's not even just with school. It's not even just with what you're trying to go with your life. It's just generally about life. You cannot change your actions. You cannot change your place. You cannot change your setting. You can't even change your present until you change your mind. Okay. And when you show yourself that you actually can, you got to find the power and you got to find the willpower. You can't just look at where you are and think this is where you're going to be for the rest of your life. Because honestly, if you set yourself up and you move forward to something better, it no longer becomes where you were. It's about where you're at.
Okay.
So yeah, that's
okay.
Okay. It's like funny that you say that too, because I wasn't seeing anybody from Baltimore ever. So, and I wasn't really going home like that either, because I wanted to stay in school and try to like work everything out on my own. Because in situations like that, like when someone's going through in those kind of situations, mm-hmm. it's all about self motivation. Yeah. So okay. I was trying to get into that mindset of I only have myself. And I mean, I was trying to tap into that. Okay. Because, you know, I was looking at it as a broader view of I'm a black man in America. And at the end of the day, that's all I have regardless. It's me.
No matter what.
I mean? So I was looking at it like that. And one day I was sitting on campus. Like some days I walk around campus and I just sit and I think. So one day I'm sitting in front of Clark's Library and I'm taking in the campus. I'm appreciating it. You know, thanking God that I had this opportunity. And a college tour walks past. It was a group of kids, and there's tours all the time on campus, so I wasn't thinking anything of it.
Yeah.
And it's a group of kids, and they walking, and we gotta. I didn't know I had an accent until I got down to Atlanta.
Like, absolutely.
Can I just saying, tell y'all something absolutely. From Jersey? You do.
So I didn't realize this. So the way we say like due to, like
yes,
things like that.
Yes.
So
yeah,
I didn't know that until I got to Atlanta. So now you can definitely distinguish.
I talk just
who's from where
I'm
you from.
Like.
So I'm Pat. So the college tours, they walking and they happen to sit on some steps across from me, like right in front of the library. And I'm sitting in these little benches across from the library, just looking and just taking it in. And I hear them talking, and I walk over and I ask them, you know, where y'all from? Oh, we are from Baltimore. The whole 30, 45 kids from Baltimore.
We're from Baltimore.
By the way, they came
this
my
right here,
too.
This right here is the exact same tour. Too. Me and AJ yeah. went on all
in sixth grade.
It's the exact same tour. It's the exact same tour.
They came to my school.
So this was kind of like this.
That kind of
like,
gives
was,
me chills.
Yeah, it gave me chills when I started looking at the forms and talking to them. It definitely did. So it was kind of humbling, and it was like that motivation I needed. And they all had their own story. And I feel like one thing is I would say is, don't look at your life story as just like, you know, an excuse. Look at it as a testimony. And don't be scared to use your testimony. Like, if you especially like in essays and things like that, don't just try to write the best essay possible as far as trying to make yourself sound well. Make them understand this is what I'm coming from.
Okay.
Like, you use where you're coming from and let them know this is where I'm coming from and this is what I'm trying to be. So please help me, you know, get this opportunity. That's one thing. Another thing is you have to be open to change. You have to be
okay,
open your mind.
That's good.
A lot of people talk about change, but you have to be open to it. My mother was telling me the other day, she said to me, I don't like change. And a lot of people don't. A lot of people are okay with like what's going on. And like even if like your circumstances are bad and you know you're home and you're going through a lot, whatever the case may be, it's like the thing I say every day is it's a great day to be great.
Honestly, yes, you know? And I remember when
yeah,
you started.
Yeah, I would say that all the time.
It's
a great
day
to
be
great.
Great.
And it's like, because that's true. Like, it's just, It's all about just bringing yourself into it.
With you repeating that, and if somebody who, like you said, it's all about changing your mindset, sometimes you don't feel like it.
Right. Yeah.
But because I know there's days when y'all probably feel like, man, it's like the homework load, because I swear, professors all take a class. I used to hate you're not in high school anymore. We know that. That's why I'm in college. Right. That don't mean I got to do five papers tonight. You know,
that's really crazy, because when I was in school, like, this is what I started learning about some of these college professors. They don't realize that I haven't at least seen this, but there aren't many students that are paying to, well, they aren't paying to be in the class, or there aren't students that are getting paid to be in that class. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen no student that's getting paid to be in that class. Students have to pay to be in the class.
Right.
And the teachers are the ones that are getting paid. So if that's the case, their job is to teach us, not the other way around. So surely no student is really in the classroom for the teacher. They're there for the education.
Right.
And teachers like to get it confused. Like, I'm not here for you.
Right.
I'm not here to
The information that you got.
And it's your job to give me what I'm paying for. Mm-hmm. So, like, I'm trying to tell you, like, some of these professors really do be, they try to.
They're on one. But and it's like.
Piggyback what he was saying, people really do have to understand that change is inevitable. Like, that is literally how the world works, even physically how the world works. I mean, every sense of the world, change is inevitable.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever you have something that's making you change, you just have to go with it. Because just like he's saying, you got to look at everything as a testimony.
Mm-hmm.
But surely you can't have a testimony without going through the test.
Without going through the test.
And
yep.
If you're going through the test, you have to appreciate it and know that God is still going to pull you through.
Mm-hmm.
Because He's not just going to teach you, have you a test and there be no teachings from it. There has to be a test and to see what you're going to do and how you're going to go about it. And whatever you do, if it's how he wanted it, if it's how it's supposed to be, you will get rewarded. And then you have your testimony.
And people are watching, people that you don't even know are watching, will be watching you go through the change. And it's funny, like Kevin said, and it's, I appreciate your mom's honesty, because there are I know people like that.
Yeah.
And you have to have a balance, because I'm the total opposite. I love change, but sometimes I have to learn to be still for a minute. Mm. The change is going to come.
Yeah.
But I just need to follow. Yeah. The patience.
I'm learning that too.
Hard because I like constant stimulation. So I want things to be constantly changing. But in terms of the test and you, like y'all saying, using as your testimony, when people read the word, if you want to be healed, our goal is to be out here to make the world a better place.
Absolutely.
And by making the world a better place, we share our testimony. And the Bible says we're healed by the blood of the Lamb and the word of the testimony.
Yeah.
So in order for us to help people, it's like surely you have to have a testimony.
Yes.
Because that's what the Bible says. So I definitely appreciate you. And I like what you said. It's about the change. Everything you guys are saying is good. And it's funny. I wanted my son to really be here to hear it, but he's still asleep. But I'm you're gonna listen to this one, because one day that's gonna be him. And at 15, he's into the arts in his school, the high school that he's in the art program. So it's funny how you said everything is centered around art, because it truly is.
I'm trying to tell you, with art, like, it could be so, because art is so open.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what people got to realize. Art is so open, and art is the true tests of somebody's own character, like who they are as a person, and that is unique to them.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I act, like, the way I perform is totally different than any other person in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And because you have to hone that in, everything has to be so specific to give you all the tools that you can work around it.
So it's got to be geared towards you.
So it has to be structured. And, like, it's been, like, just being Black in general, being a Black performer, you almost have to know how to do it all. Like, if you just look at all of these people that were performers, like, in the 60s, like Cab Calloway, they weren't just doing things they weren't just singing. They weren't just playing the piano. They was doing it all. They was acting, singing, dancing, but, like,
everything.
Playing the piano. They were, you know, they could do anything they wanted to. And in this society, how we're living today, you almost have to be versatile.
Mm-hmm.
And you almost have to be, you know, at your A game, because just one slip, now you're just another Black face. And me personally, that's just not what I want to be. Like, I want to be someone that's successful in my craft. Like, do you know, because the Tony Awards are the awards for the stage, for Broadway, stuff like that. The person who has the most Tony Awards, which are 6, is a Black woman. She's a Black woman who has 6 Tony Awards, more than any other person in history.
Who is it?
Audra McDonald.
Wow.
Her name is Audra McDonald. She has the voice of God. Like, her voice is beautiful, okay. But she has just more than one talent. She can sing, she can act. She has even played, she's playing right now in the West End. She's playing Billie Holiday.
Wow,
and
that's...
If you could just hear her sing, okay. She sings just like Billie Holiday. It's a phenomenon I can't even understand, but it's just an example of a black person who is so versatile in their craft that they had no other choice but to be successful. And that's all I want for myself. So, you know, I try to make sure that I know as much as I can within my craft and my history so that I can just be a beautiful piece to this world.
But to speak directly, like to answer your question, to speak directly to the person who's listening, I would say if you have a dream, regardless, no matter mm-hmm. what, you have to chase it. Like, nothing is given to you. Nothing is given to you. Like, no matter what, you can sit around and you can think. Like, even if, like, sometimes it's okay to wait for change, but you got to understand your circumstances, though.
Yes,
Whether it's time for you to wait or it's time for you to go get it. So, if you don't like how your mm-hmm. life is, you can change it. You got to chase your dream. And number two, like, once you start to chase your dream, you got to stay focused.
That's the hardest part.
Like, even with myself, like, you got to stay focused. And also, I have a lot of friends. Like, I have a friend who makes music. He makes amazing music. Like,
really?
And me, like, I love music, so I listen to a lot of different kinds of music, and his music is honestly some of the best I've heard. Mm. It's not true. But he makes amazing music. Like, me and him sometimes sit in his house, and he would play his music, and he would say things like, yeah, you know, this label sent me, I got a friend, this label, he sent me this beat. And he would play the beat, and then he would, like, you know, put the song together right that second. Like, yeah, this is a song I'm going to make for it, and then I'm sitting here looking at him. I cut the music off and cut everything off. And I said, honestly, like what are you doing? Because he lives with his girlfriend.
Okay. And
his girlfriend gets up early. She goes to Spelman and she go gets it. She's part of a whole bunch of different organizations. And she hustling in and out all day, every day. And he went to Morehouse, but then he dropped out to pursue music. But every time I see him, he always want to just chill.
Okay.
Being, I was just chilling. I'm like, honestly, what are you doing? Like,
so you cut the music off and told him.
Cut him off, and I said, like, if nobody else going to tell you this, I need to tell you, like, you have great music, and you have a gift. Like, what are you doing?
Seriously.
Honestly, you sitting here, your girl, she in and out, she never here. You always here. So what are you doing? You need to get out and do something. And, like, the last thing is, I would say, is honestly, don't forget where you came from. That's easy. That's easy to do when you're in a better environment.
Yeah.
I was just telling my mother about this, like.
Very easy to do.
You got Jada Pinkett, you got Monique, you got all these people that have made it out of Baltimore, mm-hmm. and they give no recognition.
Mm-hmm. None.
It's like they're not even from here anymore. Like, that's crazy.
I'm not even saying it from that point. I'm not even saying it from, like, that far. Okay. I mean, of course that, but I'm saying as far as, like, for example, I'm in Atlanta. And I'm enjoying myself and I'm having fun in college, but I'm forgetting the fact that I am from Baltimore and I don't want to live in Baltimore my whole life, because being in Atlanta is such a positive city.
Okay.
Like, it's so pro-black and everybody there is black. Like, and as far as like white privilege and everything, I forgot white people existed for a long time. I'm serious.
Because that's all
I got to the airport. All I saw was black. I'm dead serious.
I can't forget.
My whole freshman year, it was just on campus and a little far off campus. I would go in, like, downtown. I didn't see a lot of white people. It was black people, black officers.
And I think it's different. People don't get that we have a, regardless, even though sometimes we have the crab and the barrel syndrome within our own, but there's still a camaraderie between us. Mm-hmm. I was watching an episode of Blackish and the father was saw how his son interacted mm-hmm. with other people. He said, but the black male, the traditional, you make eye contact, you give the head nod. It's just something.
Yeah, it's
I'm saying in Atlanta, it's more than that. Like, here in Baltimore, like, it's like if you see a black dude, it's like he your worst enemy.
Okay,
all
but
the
there,
time, it's always mugging or something like that. In Atlanta, everybody
it's your
is
brother.
Just,
it's,
yeah.
and all the time, anybody. So nice. Anybody. And that's the best thing for me
that's
because
beautiful.
Growing mm-hmm. up, I was the, like, we both the only son.
Nah,
so it's like,
son.
Yes, we both the only son. So it's like, I always wanted brothers. And that's what, okay. and when I met AJ, okay. that was the thing. He was my brother for life. But it's like,
that's beautiful.
When I got to college, I got 300 more. And everybody treats you like it's everybody treats you just like, you know, we're brothers. And I like how Morehouse did it because they treated things kind of like, I guess how like fraternities do, how mm-hmm. like it's all about the brotherhood. They had the whole school like that. They had the whole freshman class set up like that. So they made us do certain things that like just brought us closer. Just as like, you know, just people.
And it's in a positive environment because you have gangs that are like that too, mm-hmm. but the outcome is negative
right. yeah.
versus these brothers are forcing you to be positive.
And it's like they force you to know who you living with. They force you, like, honestly, in my freshman hall, it was 300 people in that freshman hall. And I can take you through the campus and point out all 300 and tell you all about them. We were all that tight. every day. We had a lobby and our freshman hall, and it was like that lobby. We would go to class, and we all be in that lobby just deep, sitting there just talking about anything all night, any homework you needed help with, any personal problems, and anything like that. It was just it was great because you could be open, and you didn't have, and it's the best thing about being around people who understand you is like you can be yourself. You can be transparent, let it all out. People will come in there and cry. Honestly, people will come in there and cry and break down about their home issues, and it was like we accept it. It's okay. It's not nobody going around saying, but that's such and such a crying. It was all love, and it was group hugs. It was like the day we moved out the hall, people were crying. They didn't want to leave. People did not want to leave.
And you're
that
talking
home.
About these are young men.
These are men, 18, 19, grown. These are grown men. They go home and they the man of their household, but they ain't here crying because they don't want to leave this. They don't want to leave what we have right now.
Yeah.
That brotherhood that you find out there at the HBCU, being a black man, is hard to find.
I'm trying
it's hard to
you.
Find
that's
anywhere
the
else.
HBCUs.
Okay. That's the best thing
you can
right there.
Be yourself. Like I can be my whole entire self, and people will still respect me for who I am.
No
matter
what.
Because I feel like men are different than women.
Yeah.
In the aspect of as long as you're being a real man and not real like lifting weights, but as long as you being your true self, a man will accept. You.
Men are very simple. All we want is respect. We want you to respect yourself, and we want to be respected. It's so simple.
That's it.
And honestly, honestly, a real man can't understand that. A man that doesn't want to take care of what he has to do can't understand.
Even if that's just himself.
Even if that's himself. Like, even if a man respects somebody else, if you don't respect yourself, everybody sees it. Insecurity is only hidden to the person that has it, not everybody else.
Say that again.
Insecurity is only hidden to the person that has it and not everybody else. So surely if someone or anyone picks up on that insecurity and they see that you aren't respecting yourself, they know that you can never really be respected by them. Like you just can't. No man can respect anybody if he can't respect himself first, and that woman too. And honestly, that's just how it is. But that's the beauty of HBCUs, where you could just go and you could be yourself, and you realize that you've been a part of a culture your entire life that you didn't even know about. I'm connecting. I'm doing stuff and I'm connecting things with people that I ain't never even know before, like my grandmother having the little candies in her room, or you know, just simple things, or saying like, oh, these were, remember when you got burned in the neck with that hot cone when you was going to church or whatever for girls, you know what I'm saying? Like,
it's little things that
all black people have gone through, and we didn't even know that we've been a part of this culture our entire
forever. Like, go get the Vaseline so we can shine up your Easter shoes. Your mom always said that. He's shining everywhere.
It's little things.
The Crisco on the stove,
you know.
And it was funny to me is we ate like that. And there wasn't all this obesity. Now they got the Whole Foods and they're taking this out of this. But people still can't see their feet because, you know what I mean?
Honestly,
so it's like,
and it's funny because we were just
talking eating real food.
We were talking about this at school. And you know how, like, we were talking about how all black kids got to go through that situation where mommy driving past McDonald's and you like, well, mom, can we go to McDonald's? We
man.
Got food in the house. But now we realize like, that's probably a good idea.
And the burgers taste better coming up off the air.
Come out of the refrigerator, they taste 10 times better. You feel me? It's just,
but then also it's like this. Like also it's great being there, but then you got to understand one thing. And one thing that I've noticed and that the surrounding, the AUC area, the Atlanta University Center, which is Clark Atlanta, Morehouse College, or Spelman College.
Can you say that again, Kevin? Because Kevin just schooled me on something
today.
Yeah,
the AUC is the Atlanta University Center because we're all on the same campus. Like, it's so deep. If you look at it, it's so deep how connected we are because, like, the campuses rely on each other. Like Morehouse has the better food. We have like Chick-fil-A and Papa John's on our campus.
On
the campus. And
y'all,
it's like,
did y'all flex over there? Like,
yeah, it was like, okay. Yeah, we got little like the dollars on your card. Okay. Now we have each campus has different dollars on that. Like you can swipe a certain amount of money on your card depending on your meal plan. Now they all set up different, but like Morehouse is in like dollar amount. So my meal plan usually is $500 I can swipe.
Okay.
So
it's like dollars.
Yeah, like we got dollars. You know, Clark has like, you know, certain amount of swipes. Spelman has like meal exchange. They can exchange a cafeteria swipe for a meal.
Okay.
So it's like it's all different and it's all different food. So we all rely on each other. Like as far as like we have the better food, but Clark has the only library on the campus.
So
we have to go over there. But as far as Spelman, like they have like the most places you can sit and just do work. They have a place called Lower Manly and Upper Manly, where it's like it's just a building you can just sit and do work in. It's quiet. You can sit and do work. It's a Starbucks in there. So it's like they all rely on each other to that point. But what I was getting at was it's an issue is mental health, like especially amongst the black community because of the things we've been through. And it's like
They don't recognize it as that.
They don't recognize it as that. A lot of people don't. And a lot of people have issues. And it was even listening to like music.
Absolutely.
Like on Kendrick Lamar's most recent album, it's called Damn. And basically he's a rich person. I looked at it as he's a rich person. He's a very rich individual. He's very like musically talented. Mm-hmm. But his album is about him going through issues.
Wow. This has been an awesome episode so far. Listening to AJ and Kevin being so transparent on what it feels like to be young, black, and gifted in America. And if I'm not mistaken, Kevin mentioned mental health and Kendrick Lamar. I can't wait to hear how he relates these two together because they seem so opposite. And I know you guys want to know too, right? Well, guess what? You're going to have to tune in next week to part two as AJ and Kevin continue on schooling us. Now, I know I was interested in it and you were interested in it. So how many other people probably need to hear this? So if you could do me a favor and please share. Share it across all of your social medias. And speaking of social medias, you can follow me on Twitter at TSFaison, on Facebook, Tales from a Butterfly, and on Instagram at TSFaison. And guys, listening to this episode, it may have prick some feelings in you, and maybe you're going through some situations that they spoke about. But I want to leave you with this. No matter what situation you're going through, no matter what situations you find yourself in, I need you to remember, if God be for you, nobody can be against you. And your current caterpillar will one day become your future butterfly. Fly on, butterflies. Love you guys, and thanks for listening.